And welcome back to Dads on the Air, coming to you around Australia on the Community Radio Network. In this program, we bring you informing and entertaining conversations with a wide range of interesting people on topics of fatherhood, family and parenting, men's and boys' issues. Hi, I'm Bill Cable, and it is our privilege today to be able to speak to Melissa Abu-Ghazaleh, who is the founder and managing director of Top Blokes Foundation. Melissa founded Top Blokes at the age of 19, and the organisation now positively impacts over 1,600 boys a year. Melissa has a passion for giving disadvantaged young men the chance to reach their potential. Melissa, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having me.
So, Melissa, what inspired a 19-year-old woman to want to work with disadvantaged young men?
Yeah, look, when I was 19, I realised that we were being bombarded by a lot of negative news stories in the media. Often we can see the image in our heads, from alcohol-fueled violence to, you know, young guys being hoons in cars. And I think that was really what sort of sparked my interest in, well, why is it that we often paint young men as liabilities to our community? And how is it that we're able to actually help young men change that culture for themselves? And it was around that time that I started to do a bit of research. I learned that around 82% of the news stories that we see about young men is negative. And I remember, and I'm not sure if anyone else remembers, but around 10 years ago, the sort of biggest news item when it came to young men was around graffiti on trains. It was sort of the hot topic. And back then, there was a particular incident where 9 young men were arrested for graffitiing on a train. And then the media put their face on the front page of the paper the next day. And so there was this sort of like common dialogue around that we need to teach boys a lesson, and naming and shaming them is the right way to change their behavior. And I guess for anyone who has worked with young men before, that stuff doesn't work, you know, it just adds fuel to the fire. So I guess I thought that there was a bit of a challenge, you know, how do we create a culture where young men themselves are rethinking and wanting to change their behavior for the better?
So it was that emphasis on graffiti and the reaction that inspired you to perhaps go a bit deeper. What do you see as the big issues for the young men today?
Yeah, look, there's so many evolving issues for young men today, and a lot of latest trends and emerging trends that we're only starting to see a lot more of. I think there's quite a few. So obviously mental health is the biggest that we know most about. We're really fortunate in Australia that we have excellent mental health education for young people. But it's sort of like what the underlying factors are as well as sort of the technological advances. So a lot of what we're seeing is, for example, if we want to talk about pornography, it's really, really big with young men's mental health and well-being. I think when we think about pornography, obviously the first thing that comes to mind is the objectification of both men and women in pornography. A lot more research is emerging to show that the young men are the highest consumers of pornography, and young men as young as 9 or 11 years old are starting to watch it. And there's a lot more boys and young men coming out to talk about experiencing what the common term is called porn-induced erectile dysfunction, which means that young men physiologically aren't sort of performing the way that they should because they're consuming so much pornography. And there's a lot more research around mental health, you know, high use of pornography will increase their sense of anxiety, reduce their self-esteem, their confidence as well, and therefore that's impacting their relationships. So that's just one example, I guess, of what's impacting young guys. Obviously, transitional periods, you know, we see a lot of boys who are transitioning, for example, from year 6 to year 7. That's a huge time for them. They're usually experiencing an increased amount of anxiety or pressure, or even nervousness. And we're also seeing that as well with young men who are transitioning into adulthood. So they might leave school early, be an early school leaver, or, you know, they might have what they think are their plans for their future, but sort of when they come to it, it might not necessarily be what they think it is.
And do you find these problems worse in the city or in the regional areas?
Hard because we hear stories from young men from all across the country, so it's really hard to sort of say, but what we do know for sure is that those young men in regional and rural areas don't necessarily have the same support structures as those young men in metropolitan areas. So obviously, you know, places like Headspace, play a really critical part to give young men the support that they need. And rural areas often won't receive the same level of services and programs, like youth programs, that might be required to help young men. So, look, there's pros and cons, obviously, for being in both either regional or a city-based area. And I guess our job with the Top Blokes Foundation is to just try and reach as many young men as we can.
Yeah, you've identified that young men seem to be natural risk takers. I'm just wondering what you do about that. If you know, if you're naturally a risk taker, how do you sort of rein it in?
Go about that.
Yes.
Yeah. Do you know the what we tell young men, and this is one thing that I'm really passionate about talking about, is, you know, risk taking is often considered to be a negative thing, and often young people are taking risks, usually that might cause harm to them or to others. But risk taking is something that could also be a really healthy if it's used appropriately. So for a lot of young men that we work with, particularly the more disadvantaged, it's a huge risk for them to stay in school and to want to learn, or it's a huge risk for them to say no to taking drugs because their friends are pressuring them to as well. So, you know, we often have this idea that taking risks is, you know, jumping off cliffs and driving without a license, and of course that definitely happens, but I think the key is we need to teach young men how to take risks that are going to benefit them and how to take calculated risks. And we do that as adults every day in our lives, you know, when we think about, you know, our employment, or, you know, whether we should buy property in our current property market crisis that we have going on. So it's a natural part of life. And I think the best thing that we can do is to help young men how to make better judgments around the risks that they take, and how can they minimise harm to themselves and to others, and how can they actually make risks that are going to benefit them.
And this is where the Top Blokes Foundation comes in. The figures you've got are absolutely extraordinary. I mean, there's one I saw where 92% of the people that come to you learn what they should be doing about their own health, and they take a much more greater interest. Their self-esteem rises, you know, in 86% of your people. There are a whole lot of great things going on now, aren't there?
Yeah, look, and what we've kind of learned over the years with our mentoring program, which is a 16-week mentoring program that we run with boys, is they actually don't get that many opportunities in their lives to be in a safe environment with their peers, to have really honest conversations about whatever it is that they're going through. So whether it is to do with peer pressure or issues at home, or to talk about drugs and alcohol. So that's sort of the type of environment that we want to create, where young men are safe to know that they won't be judged. You know, we've all been through it. We all know what it's like to be a teenager. And I think, you know, we also try and build, you know, their emotional resilience and their skill sets. So going back to the comment that I made earlier that, you know, often the media will paint young men as liabilities, it's about, well, how do we turn them into assets? And I often say and really believe that young men today are the most untapped resource in Australia. They are incredibly smart and savvy. And when we talk about a lot of these social issues, for example, you know, alcohol-fueled violence, you see the politicians talking, you see the policymakers, you see, you know, adults, but no one's actually asking young men, what's the solution? How do we help to reduce alcohol-fueled violence? So they are a wealth of knowledge, and I think it's just about creating that safe environment for them to be able to thrive.
Yes, they are a powerful force, and if they go off in the wrong direction, they can be harmful, but if they go in the right direction, they can do a lot of good for all of us, for the community.
That's right. It's just about mobilising them. And, you know, it's funny, people often say, well, why do you call it the Top Blokes? And you know, why don't you call it like a leadership program or like Men of Honour? And we often say young men don't necessarily want to be leaders. They don't want to be in the limelight. But what they do want to be is the Top Blokes. That's what they aspire to be. And for us, it's about, well, how do we help young men to make, you know, good choices in their everyday lives? How do we help them to be better friends? How do we help them to be better partners, better children to their parents as well? It's the little things.
And we're speaking today with Melissa Abu-Ghazali, who is the founder and managing director of Top Blokes Foundation. Melissa, we're going to take a short break now, and you picked a song for us. Could you tell us which one and why you picked it?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I picked You're the Voice by John Farnham, and the reason why is, like, who doesn't love this song? Every time I hear it, I obviously get really motivated, but it also reminds me that when you're really passionate about something, you know, so lucky to be in Australia, we all have a voice and we should use it to the betterment of the country.
And that was You're the Voice by John Farnham. And our special guest today is Melissa Abu-Ghazali. Melissa, we were just talking about the incentive for young blokes to become top blokes. I'm just wondering, you know, speaking to you as a bloke, what actually is a top bloke in your mind?
Well, in my mind, it might be different to sort of the young men that we work with. I think in my mind, a top bloke is a man who makes just really good, sound choices. And that's something that we really try and help young men to do, is to make informed choices. So to help reduce impulsivity, just when you're in a situation, just try and think it through, what's the best choice for both now and for later, and to not be too conscious of what the social ramifications are by stepping out and making the right choice instead of what, you know, the choices that your peers might say.
Because these days there are so many choices in everything, aren't there? I mean, even going buying a sandwich, you'd probably be confronted by choices.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, like, it's funny, often, like, one thing that I often hear from lots of different audiences is that young men today have more choices than any previous generation of young men. So, you know, back in the day, decades ago, typically, whether you're a young male or female, you had a very prescribed career path, very prescribed family life, and you kind of knew what it was going to be and you couldn't stray too far from it. Whereas now there are so many opportunities, so many choices. So I can understand how it would be confusing, I guess, for young people, but it's also an incredible time to be a young person. Mm.
You have different programs for the juniors aged, say, 14 to 17, and then young men 18 to 24. How does the approach differ between the very young ones and the young men?
Yeah, so look, they're very similar in that we use peer mentoring principles. So we believe that you'll get really strong outcomes with young men when you partner them up with mentors who are sort of similar in age or similar in story or background. But what we find working with the younger guys is this is sort of the time when either they've started to experience a number of the issues that we talk about, or they're very much headed in that direction. So we use it as a preventative strategy where we're helping to upskill them. It's really big on social education, so giving them the right information about a lot of the topics that we talk about. So, for example, with drugs and alcohol, the trends in drugs, it changes so quickly. There's always a new drug on the market. Mm. It's about giving them the correct information of how it impacts their bodies and their minds. But with the program for young men who are aged 18 to 24, very same concept, except these young men are very worldly. They've already had quite a number of years out in the world as adults, and they know what goes on, and they've been in so many situations. The one thing about that program is a lot of young men aged 18 to 24 that we come across have unpaid fines. So, you know, for example, like jumping trains, driving without a license. And what happens is if they don't have the means to pay those fines off, the Office of State Revenue will actually, as with all things, have a late fee. And so obviously these fines keep accumulating if a young man can't pay them off. So they have sort of no other ways to be able to pay them off. So if they complete our mentoring program, for every month that they complete it, they can actually have $1,000 volunteered off their fines. So it's a sort of a bit of a community service, but then that way, when they're engaged in our programs to pay off their fines, they're still getting that valuable education that they probably won't get in other circumstances.
I think that's very commendable, because the sort of education they might get otherwise might be in the jail.
Yeah, look, and the thing is that people might not realise is when you reach a certain level of fines that you're not paying off, the department can actually suspend your driver's licence, or if you don't have a driver's licence, you won't be eligible for it. And what happens with a lot of these young men is it prevents them from gaining employment or keeping employment, particularly if they're engaged in a trade. So what's really critical is being able to help them volunteer off their fines so they can get their driver's license, because it increases their employability. And we've had a number of instances where pretty much straight after finishing our program and regaining their driver's license, these young men have gained either casual employment or an apprenticeship. And all of us would know in the sector that that is one big key to helping to reduce disadvantage.
Mm. Now, you offer workshops for teachers and educators as well. Do you suggest different ways of teaching boys from, say, the way girls are taught?
Oh, look, it's a really hard one, isn't it? Because obviously teachers are dealing with so much and they're incredibly resource poor and time poor. I don't think it's necessarily offering different teaching methods, but I think it is about just being really conscious of what are the issues that young men are going through in the classroom as well. But look, it doesn't hurt for teachers to learn different ways of the ways that boys learn. And what we often find is they're very kinesthetic learners, very experiential as well. So the more that we can incorporate learning techniques that appeal to boys, I guess their engagement strategies are going to be a lot higher. But, you know, I think, well, particularly with the boys that we work with, and for us, obviously, they're usually a lot more vulnerable, they've just got so much personal issues going on, and they come from such complex backgrounds that there is only so much that a teacher can do in a classroom environment. Obviously, you know, they've got 20 to 30 kids under their watch, so I can imagine just how difficult it is for teachers. But I guess our workshops do cover that. It's what are the latest trends that are impacting boys' health, and what can they do within their responsibilities and their profiles to be able to support the boys?
You mentioned kinesthetic, so I take it you mean they should be sort of moving around more rather than just sitting at a desk and listening?
Yeah, look, and a lot of international researchers and educators say that actually, in that boys, you know, physiologically might need to be up and moving around. But then again, yes, that's true, but that's also a bit of a generalization that, you know, I guess the stereotype that boys can't sit there and pay attention. We know that it can work, and I'm sure there's lots of classrooms across Australia where that is definitely the case. So that's why it's one of those things that has to be a case-by-case basis.
Now, one of the topics you deal with is called evolving masculinity, how it is changing young men. How do you see masculinity evolving at the moment?
It's probably evolving quicker than it ever has historically. So, you know, there's a lot of stereotypes around what it is to be a man. And I think, you know, usually we say the first port of call, or who is it that's giving out these images, is the media. And that is, you know, the stoic masculine identity. You know, men are to not show feelings, or they need to be physically and mentally strong, and they need to be the provider. And, you know, in some cases that's great, and that might be what a man wants to be. But I think the way that it's evolving, and I think it's really exciting, is that it's giving men more options of how to express their masculinity. So we would know that in the last decade or so, for young men, or men in particular, to, you know, display, well, people often call it the feminine side, which I don't like that term, but to display the more emotional side is very positive. For men to be able to be stay-at-home dads is considered to be more legitimate these days, and there's less social stigma around it. For men and young men to not have to prescribe to a certain physicality. So it's okay if, you know, you don't aspire to have muscles, or you don't aspire to look like an athlete. So I think it's evolving in a really positive way. It's giving more boys options, which, you know, means that they're going to be more comfortable in themselves. And we know that when boys have high self-esteem and high self-worth, then obviously they're going to be more secure in themselves, and that's going to play out in their behaviours.
Now, Melissa, I know EY, the old Ernst & Young, is doing a social input analysis on Top Blokes Foundation. Is that going to hopefully lead to some more funding for the great work you're doing?
Yeah, look, it's a big part of it. So we currently don't receive any government funding. So we receive community donations and sort of private donations to keep us going. But the one big thing that we're very passionate about is around evaluating our work. Are we actually doing a good job? Are we actually improving the lives of young men, and to what extent? So we have our own evaluation framework that we use to evaluate, but we thought we'd take it one step further and have it independently evaluated by EY. So that's going to be a three-year study. We're currently halfway through. And what they're doing is taking data from 10 schools that we're working with, from the participants, the boys in our program, and looking at, well, what are the social impact of our program, but also the economic benefits. So how many boys are we helping to gain or helping to get a job, or helping to reduce the propensity to be involved in the justice system, or you know, in the health system as well? So it's quite a complex study, and we're just really fortunate for all the partners who have come together to make it happen. So the report should actually be released by the end of next year, so we're really looking forward to the results.
I'm sure you'll come through with flying colours, and I hope we can perhaps talk again when that report comes back and discuss its findings. Melissa, we've reached a part of the show where we ask our guests to pick another song. So would you like to tell us the other song you picked and why you picked it?
Yeah, so I picked It Feels Like World by Wes Carr. People probably won't remember him. I think he was an Australian Idol finalist or winner. It's just one of those songs. It's just a pump-up song. Makes you feel good, makes you sort of just reflect and you know, reflect on your life and yeah.
It was only one night, and no one ever knew, never saw her again.
And that was Feels Like Whoa by Wes Carr. Just remains for me now to thank our very special guest today, Melissa Abu-Ghazaleh. Melissa, thank you very much for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Don't forget, we'd love to hear from any of our listeners. You can go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, and send us an email, and we'll be in touch. If you'd like to listen to this show again or any of our shows, go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, or you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. And we'll be back next week with another show on Dads on the Air.